I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the left says the Daniel Penny case is about racism, and I agree. Plus, shock of the century, crime drops in a city where police officers are actually allowed to enforce the law. And I want to take some time on the show today to apologize for failing to observe a very, very important holiday. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can give the gift of Undivided to a loved one or maybe an enemy. Just go to patreon.com/undivided/gift. It's common sense, the gift that keeps on giving. Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A lot of Washington State, West Coast based news to get to today, but there are a couple big breaking stories nationally that I would like to weigh in on. So a suspect has been, I don't think it's been fully arrested, like taken into custody, but they're like, we haven't arrested him. You've arrested him, let's be honest. United in the murder of the United Healthcare CEO, and it's exactly what we thought it would be. I knew it was going to be some left-wing nut. I maybe believed it for the first few minutes that it was some sort of hitman, but then it became pretty clear that it was like a anti, you know, healthcare system sort of person. But it sounds like it's even more than that, because I don't think you have to be a left wing not to hate our healthcare system. But this was also a guy who's like really into kind of anti-capitalism stuff and that kind of, and he came from privilege, which we know a lot of left-wing activists came from privilege. So a little bit of information. He's ID'd as Luigi Mangione, ex-Ivy League student, according to the New York Post. It says he's a tech whiz. Luigi Mangione, 26, of Townsend, Maryland, has not been charged but was taken into custody. The former prep school valedictorian was caught with a gun, a silencer, four fake IDs with names used during the killer stint in New York City, and a manifesto, sources said. I can only imagine what that manifesto said. They also added a few additional details. This seemed pretty obvious that he had some sort of, you know, personal vendetta against the medical community because of the treatment of an ailing relative. He also worked for a short time at an assisted living facility for the elderly while he was still in high school. He is like really into anti-capitalism, climate change causes, according to law enforcement sources who spoke to the New York Post. But again, he came from privilege. Did really very well in high school. He went to a high school where the tuition, so it was all boys school, it's nearly $40,000 a year. Like these young white left-wing nuts, we see that in Seattle too, like, oh, the son of a judge, you know, and it's like a son of a big businessman, like totally in privilege. So they go out and they destroy things, or in this case, commit a violent act, and then what, sneak back into their parents' basements. Not a surprise, this is a left-wing nut who is operating, sounds like, on his own out of some sort of vendetta against the healthcare industry, but looks like they've ID'd the guy, so that's good news. I want to talk about the Daniel Penny case. So we haven't discussed this really virtually at all on the show, which I don't know why it flew under the radar. We just had a lot going on this year locally, nationally. My heart was like in my stomach over the Daniel Penny thing over the weekend. So Daniel Penny, veteran who was on the subway in New York where this, you know, mentally ill homeless man came in and he was threatening people, and he ends up putting him in a chokehold to try to subdue him with the help of some other passengers. And Jordan Neely, the name of the 30-year-old, ended up dying. Now at trial, of course, it was similar to like the George Floyd thing where they said that he died because, you know, he was choked out, but he died because of all these other issues like being on drugs, etc. But what happened last week in this case, so the New York's woke prosecutors decided to charge Daniel Penny. Despite the fact he like saved everyone on that subway, he should have been hailed a hero. And instead in America, what do? We put him on trial. And the reason that he was put on trial is why? Because he's white and the guy who he put a chokehold on was black. That's all. That's all it is. You know, the left said this was a case about racism, and I 100% agree. 100% agree. I don't think Daniel Penny would have been charged in this case if he weren't white and the guy who died was black. Don't think so for one second in the world. And also this idea that if Daniel Penny isn't convicted, that we're in a racist society rather than he just didn't do it. So I'm thrilled that Daniel Penny was acquitted this morning. You know, there had been, this is from NBC News, Daniel Penny found not guilty in chokehold death of Jordan Neely. The jury acquitted Penny of criminally negligent homicide, and that happened after last week they deadlocked on the more serious charge of manslaughter. It says Daniel Penny was acquitted Monday of criminally negligent homicide and the chokehold death of Jordan Neely, a 30-year-old homeless man with a history of mental illness. The decision on the fifth day of deliberations came after the jury deadlocked Friday on the more serious charge of manslaughter, leading the judge to dismiss it. Penny faced up to 4 years in prison. This is obviously justice in this case. You know, one of the things that there's a lot of things I want to talk about here, but immediately after this happened, he was acquitted this morning. Of course, what happened outside? Of course, the left wing, you know, race baiters had to protest. Here's how that played out on Fox News.
Protesters are pretty upset. There's a large crowd of them out here next to me. You can hear them rattling the police barricades, saying no justice, no peace. And what they're yelling now follows a series of threats that they hurled earlier as the defense walked in with their client, Daniel Penny, telling the defense team that Daniel Penny can have no peace here in New York if he's found not guilty on this lesser charge, criminally negligent homicide. And from what I can hear right now, they're repeating those threats. They are very angry. Harris, I also want to mention there were a couple people here this morning to support Daniel Penny, but the anti-Penny crowd far outweighs them, and they seem pretty upset. We're seeing police officers come out here in droves to try to keep the two groups separated for now.
Yeah, that's an embarrassment. Not that people are protesting. That doesn't surprise me that people who, again, are race baiters who believe Daniel Penny got away with murder because he's white, when in reality he wouldn't even have, he was only charged because he was white. It's insane. That doesn't surprise me. They're going to be out there. It's embarrassing that there weren't more people out there on behalf of Daniel Penny. I said it over the weekend. There should be hordes of reasonable, common sense Americans who are sick of these woke prosecutions and sick of the race baiting who are out there supporting Daniel Penny. And there just weren't. There was like a couple of them, as Fox News said. I think that's an embarrassment. But again, you know, average normal people who think clearly and aren't race baiting, they're at work. They have jobs and they're out doing these things and they're not professional protesters. You know, there's a lot of elements to this. Again, I think it is about racism. In this country, you know, the activists and the media will automatically buy into the narrative that if you're a white person and you contribute to or cause the death of a black person, that that was only the result of racism. When there are, of course, a lot of different factors involved. Like you have Jordan Neely, who had a long history, a long criminal history, a history of violence, a history of threatening behavior. No, it wasn't about him. It wasn't about his actions. It was about, oh, this Marine veteran who saw women being threatened on a closed subway car decided to take action and he saved a bunch of people. It wasn't about that. No, it was about the color of his skin. It is 100% about racism. It is. You see, there's so many examples. It's like, if you're a white person and you're involved in the criminal justice system these days, like, God bless you. Good luck. And look, we used to have a period in this country, 100%, where I think black people were, I mean, obviously, you know, the history of our country, right? But where black people were given unfair outcomes in the criminal justice system. I believe that's true. But I believe we have come a long way since then. But with all these, like, woke DEI, whatever it is, their solution is, oh, let's just go back to those policies, but make it against white people. Like, oh, let's, you know, let's fix discrimination in this country, the history of discrimination against black people by making discrimination against white people in the form of DEI. You know, let's fix like the unjust criminal justice system by making it unjust for white people. Like, nope, problem solved. It's just insane. They just do the opposite thing. It's just horrifying for Daniel Penny. I don't know what his life is going to look like moving forward, but he and that's the other thing I was talking about over the weekend. There was so much at stake, not only for Daniel Penny, but I think for society at large. You know how few men these days are willing to stand up and insert themselves into a situation if people are in danger? You know, because just generally, if you're in a blue city and you're a white dude, like, are you going to come to the, and it's a black guy? Are you going to come to the defense of some women who are in danger on the subway if Daniel Penny had been convicted? No, you're going to sit there. You're going to put your headphones on. You're going to mind your own freaking business because you don't want to go to prison for the rest of your life for doing what you know is the right thing. But you know, in cities like New York or Seattle or, you know, down in LA, that you might be prosecuted because of the color of your skin. And I'm sorry, but as a woman, I want to live in a society where men are going to jump in if I'm in danger, if I'm being attacked by a random person on the street, if I'm being harassed on a subway. That's the society I want to live in, where good people do the right thing and then they're not penalized for it after the fact. And so this whole case has just been horrifying. It's shameful that America and that the criminal justice system in New York put Daniel Penny through this, and that more people, frankly, weren't sitting outside that courthouse ready to push back against the left-wing rioters who are going to say it's about race. Reasonable Americans need to stand up. They need to stand up for people like Daniel Penny. They need to stand up for themselves. We need to put an end to the woke prosecutions and the absolute race baiting of the left. It is truly, truly insane. All right, speaking of race baiting, so a few days ago, I think this first came out December 3rd, Governor Inslee, as you know, he issued a hiring freeze. So hiring freeze, travel freeze, this is from the Washington State Standard. Washington Governor Inslee orders hiring and travel freeze for state agencies. With the state facing a multi-billion dollar budget gap, Washington Governor Jay Inslee has ordered state agencies to freeze most non-discretionary and non-essential hiring, service contracts, purchasing, and travel. That seems like a very reasonable thing. Yeah, we've got a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit that you created, Governor Inslee. But yeah, when you're facing a budget deficit, you got to make sure that, you know, well, we can't hire more people because we're trying to figure out if we need to let some people go. And yeah, discretionary travel, of course, that sounds like it makes sense. But the same day, thank you to an undivided viewer who noted this for me and sent me an email. The same day that Governor Inslee issued this hiring freeze, he also put out an executive order. Executive Order 2404, increasing employment opportunities in Washington state government. So that just on its face is a little weird, right? Like, why are we freezing hiring and then on the same day you're putting out an executive order aimed at increasing employment opportunities in Washington state? Like, that seems a little weird. But not only that, it's about increasing employment opportunities through DEI hiring. Like, wait, why are we, you just talked about hiring freezes. So why are you releasing this wide-ranging executive order talking about how to improve DEI hiring in Washington state? It says achieving equity and diversity within our state agency workforce requires a comprehensive approach to recruitment and hiring that identifies and eliminates barriers to employment and institutional discrimination. Went on to say, whereas Washington State strives to be a leader in the movement toward equity and justice, and we are committed to demonstrating our progress in measurable ways, starting within our own state agencies. What is that? So we're in a hiring freeze. We don't have any money to do anything extra. Yet the governor releases this multi-page rambling executive order about all the ways the state and state agencies are going to be directed to improve their commitment to progress and movement toward equity and justice. So on the same day he says we have no money, hiring freeze, the governor instituted all these new things that all the state agencies need to do to make sure that they're hiring in equitable and just ways. This is the reason we had to have a hiring freeze in the first place. This is the reason we're facing a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit, is because our governor is focused on dumb shit like that. Because our governor is focused on all these programs and initiatives and executive orders and efforts that the government shouldn't be involved in whatsoever. It's just like it's so funny. It's like the same day, and you don't even care how stupid that looks, doing that executive order back to back with saying we have to have a hiring freeze in state agencies. Now, one of the other aspects of this executive order is something I'm kind of torn on, and I'm curious what you guys think, because part of this executive order is instituting, so this was a bipartisan sort of effort to say, hey, you know, there are some state jobs that we don't need four-year degrees for. This was actually something spearheaded by Republicans. I think it was last session, maybe beginning of the session before, and then remember Bob Ferguson stole that idea from Republicans and he turned a political ad into it when he was running for governor. And he had this ad that had his brother, who's a Boeing machinist, in it, talking about how I'm going to eliminate four-year degree requirements, you know, for state government. And I remember Travis Couture, a Republican state representative, had retweeted that campaign video and said, Republicans already did that. That's already law in Washington state. So Bob Ferguson was saying he's going to do something that's already law and that was driven by Republicans. Just very, very funny. But part of this sort of DEI equity inclusion effort in employment for the state has to do with implementing that. So they are tying it into sort of DEI as, you know, this is a way to improve access, equitable access to employment in the state, is to get rid of some of these unnecessary hiring requirements that we have. Some of this I actually agree with. I don't think it belongs under the scope of DEI and how did he word that? the equity and justice. I don't think so. I think it just, it's almost reducing government bureaucracy and layers that needlessly prevent someone from getting a job with the state, for instance. So it has, again, this is part of the governor's executive order, improving access to state employment. So remove degrees as the only way to meet a required qualification unless the degree is required by law to perform the essential function of the job. By July 1st, remove certifications, specific years of required experience, and other biased qualifications. For example, required English proficiency, driver's licenses, lifting 50 pounds, etc., unless there is an established standard for it. By December 31st of 2025, agencies will replace degree and year requirements with the skills, ability, and knowledge necessary for performing the role. Applicants must demonstrate how they meet the skills, abilities, or knowledge for the role, which may include degree or work, personal lived experience. So there's a little, it's a little bit of a gray area, but like, I don't think you have to have a degree to do a job. If you can, in their words, meet the necessary skills, abilities, and knowledge for doing the jobs, and you can demonstrate that, I don't understand why you have to have a four-year degree. That's meritocracy. Like, that's so funny, because in this one executive order, you have all these things like that are about meritocracy mixed in with DEI. Those things are like totally different. Like, hiring someone because their skin color, their sexual orientation is the opposite of meritocracy. But some of the things buried in here are about meritocracy. Like, if you're the best person to actually perform the task and you don't have a four-year degree, you should get the job, in my opinion. But some of these other things, like saying that they call them biased qualifications, like requiring English proficiency, driver's license, and lifting 50 pounds. Like, look, okay, if you're doing an office job and for some reason they have a requirement they have to be able to lift 50 pounds, that's stupid. But like, I would tend to think that the only jobs where you actually would have to show that you're capable of lifting 50 pounds are jobs where you'd need to be able to lift 50 pounds. Isn't that weird? Isn't that a weird thing to eliminate? I don't get it. And then the driver's license thing. Like, if you don't have to drive for your job, you don't need a driver's license. The English proficiency thing, I'm having a hard time knowing what state agencies or state job you wouldn't have to know English for. But I guess if there's a job where you're not interacting with the public, you really don't need to have an English language skill, that's fine with me. So I'm fine in theory with this. I don't think it belongs in the realm of like DEI hiring. It's more like meritocracy issues. My only concern is this, and I'm sure it's the concern Nicole probably had when she saw this. We're just reducing standards for everything. Mm-hmm. We're just like, you get a prize. Like, don't have to go to school. Don't have to be able to lift 50 pounds. Don't have to have a driver's license. Don't have to speak English. My concern is that rather than this being, yeah, we want to open the door to the most qualified people, regardless of if they, you know, meet some of these kind of one-off things, then that's fine. But I worry that this is going to turn into essentially like an effort to just like anybody gets a job in state government. Like, our standards are just going to go to hell. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a ridiculous concern, totally in support of the no four-year degree thing. But I just feel like we are erasing standards from every segment of society. And I don't know if the result of that is going to be very good. So I'm curious what you guys think about that. Are you in line with loosening some of those hiring standards for state agencies? But at the same time, it's like, you fired people because they didn't get a COVID vaccine. Like, you fired people for not doing something that had nothing to do with their job. And now you're like, oh, we're going to loosen all these other hiring standards. But you were really strict about that hiring standard. You were really, really strict about that requirement of the job. No COVID vaccine. Just doesn't make any sense. State government is a mess. All right. I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. And one of the things I said on the show last week is, look, I understand that this is a stupid kind of time of year to be talking about starting a new weight loss journey. You got Thanksgiving just ended, then you got Christmas, you probably have all these events, all these dinners, things to do, and you're just in your mind like, I'll just wait till the first of the year. Here's the thing, well, what's going to happen on the first of the year? Are you going to be able to commit to a program then, or are you just using the holidays and gatherings as an excuse not to do what you know you need to do? I started the program right before Thanksgiving 2 years ago, and in my first 60 days, so I went through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, Nicole and I even took a trip down to Vegas during that period of time, and I still managed to lose 30 pounds by the end of the year. So it can be done. And I'm down 40 pounds total, and it's about, you know, not using every single thing you have coming up as an excuse not to get back in shape. And so I did it the most difficult time of year, and I know you can do it too. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team, and just see if the program's right for you. It might not be. I had a woman approach me the other day saying, hey, I saw your weight loss results on Facebook, and, you know, I've kind of hit menopause, and I'm having a hard time. And I looked at her, and I said, ma'am, you do not need that program. I was like, you do not have enough weight to lose. And I was just honest. Like, it's not going to be right for every person. Like, it was at the gym and she was telling me that. And she's like, pretty in shape and like is at the gym all the time. And I'm like, I don't really know that that's, I said, I don't see a lot of fat on your body, to be honest. So not every weight loss program is right for every person. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free consultation today. All right. Here is a real doozy for all of you today. Okay. Real doozy. There's a local city where they've actually decided to let officers enforce the law. And you know what happened in that city when they decided to let officers enforce the law? Hold on to your britches. Because crime went down. Shocking, I know. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, what is this city where this unthinkable craziness has happened? It's the city of Federal Way. And we know that in that area, you know, North or South King County, North Pierce County, there's a lot of crime issues there. You know, some of it's gang related. And so that leads to a lot of other issues. But burglaries, robberies, you know, there's really this challenge there with crime. Well, the city of Federal Way has figured out a solution to that challenge, and it is enforcing the law when they are allowed to do so. So there's a couple things at play here. First, I'll just look at the stats that were put out by the city of Federal Way. So they anticipate year over year that crime's going to be down around 11%, if not more, by the time we finish out December. They've seen a 50% drop year over year in homicide. They have seen a 42% drop in robbery. They've seen an 18% drop in residential burglary. They've seen a 52% drop in motor vehicle theft. And here's the key, and one of the things we're going to talk about. They've seen a 402% increase in drug and narcotic offenses. So you might be thinking, 402% increase. The drug crisis is out of control. No, with that particular crime, the only way you're able to measure it right is if arrests are made. So like with murder, for instance, you could still, you know, when there's a homicide, an arrest doesn't have to be made for it to be counted as a homicide. But with a drug or narcotics offense, that's a 402% increase in arrests. That's what's being reflected there. Is they finally, because the state fixed the drug possession statute, they finally have the ability to send officers out and actually arrest people who are out on the streets using drugs out in the open. And so you're seeing this massive uptick in Federal Way's decision and willingness to arrest and charge drug offenders. And at the same time, what are you seeing? You're seeing a drop in homicides. You're seeing a drop in robberies. You're seeing a drop in aggravated assault. You're seeing a drop in commercial and residential burglary. And then you're seeing a 52% drop in motor vehicle theft. Now, I think there is also some nexus there to arresting more drug offenders. But what do you what other thing do you think is attributable to that 52% drop in motor vehicle theft? Well, over the past year, they've actually been able to pursue people who are driving stolen vehicles because the legislature, because of a citizen initiative, was forced to walk back restrictions that they put on police pursuits. And they did that at the end of last legislative session. So you have these things that are very clearly, you have cause and effect. Way more drug arrests, huge reduction in a number of categories of crime. Officers are able to pursue vehicles again. Oh, look at that craziness. 52% decrease year over year in motor vehicle theft. Wow, enforcing the law and allowing police officers to enforce the law really does make a difference. So joining us today to talk about these stats is Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell. Mayor Farrell, welcome back to Undivided.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I love seeing these numbers go in the right direction. That's not the case everywhere. So it seems like there's maybe two separate things going on here. So one, the police pursuit law. So we've been living with the change now after the legislature passed the initiative. And you guys have seen a 52% decrease year over year in motor vehicle theft. Can you attribute that to the change in the law?
Yeah, the bottom is dropping out of that number, just like we knew it would. It's a crazy amount. In fact, I've been watching this number all year. My prediction is even next year, it'll keep going down. And that's because we can pursue and word's out. But I got to tell you, I had a feeling that car theft would be at that number. And that's a dramatic decrease. But the other number that really caught my eye and that prompted me to put this information out for the people to hear see is the 42% decrease in robberies.
Yep.
That is a dramatic decrease. And that's because almost every robbery that was occurring in our city right off the freeway was occurring in a stolen car, either to get there, to leave, et cetera. And so that's dramatic. Month to month, comparing this November to last November, that reduction was a 72% reduction in robberies comparing November's crime numbers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's exactly what you predicted. You were on the show talking about what would happen if the legislature, you know, passed the police pursuit initiative or felt compelled or forced to have to pass it. And it wouldn't just be the motor vehicle theft. It would be all the things that you've been saying all along, I've been saying all along, are tied to we're tied to the rampant increase in motor vehicle thefts. So you're seeing this now. I mean, do you expect anyone to discount that, you know, to say, well, it could be, is there anything else they might try to attribute it to?
It's probably a couple of other things. I mean, I think, you know, what's interesting, I was at a board meeting for Valley Communications, which is the Valley 911.
Yep.
And they had noticed their numbers were down. And I told them about ours, and I attributed that to car theft as well, the pursuit law. Mm-hmm. Residential burglary is down 18% and commercial burglary down 8. I got all these numbers memorized, Brandy. I got to tell you, I think it's a cascade effect.
Yeah.
And so when my last assignment at the King County Prosecutor's Office was in the car theft unit. I spent a few years in the homicide and violent crime unit, but my last assignment there was in car theft. And one of the things I noticed when we still had paper files is that these guys, these prolific car thieves, would go car to car to car to car.
Yeah.
And when we took them off the street, the numbers would drop dramatically. And that's just because that you've got the same people, a very small cohort of people committing a lot of these crimes. So that's what's occurring.
Yeah, it's awesome to see. I think it's undeniable because, again, there is that, if you're running into a building, you're not doing it with your car.
Right,
if you're smashing in to steal an ATM, you're not doing it with your car. You're doing it with a stolen car.
Yeah.
The other big factor here, I think, and this to me shows Federal Way is doing what it needs to do, and I wish other people would follow suit, is the nexus of drug use and your decision to arrest people for using narcotics out on the streets. So I think it was the Thurston County Sheriff was on the show, and I had asked him, how much of your crime crisis would be eliminated if we started to take the drug crisis seriously? And he said 90%. Because a lot of what they're dealing with is drug-motivated types of crime. So you guys have seen a 402% increase year over year in drug and narcotic offenses. But that number reflects an increase in arrests, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what had occurred, as you know, is several years ago when the state Supreme Court came down with the decision to essentially invalidate the state's drug law because it was missing one word. They had to intentionally, if you're going to be held accountable for a crime, it makes sense that that the conduct has to be intentional, not accidental. So all the legislature needed to do was add one word. What they did instead was create this odd, two warnings, two prior warnings that essentially created a state of de facto legalization of all street level narcotics. That meant that we couldn't arrest people because there was no database, no way to track it. And once the legislature actually went back, and I got to give them credit for doing this, and Brandy, I actually think the gross misdemeanor designation was exactly the way to go because they let us, with the small amounts of controlled substances, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, fentanyl, district courts and municipal courts, city courts, are essentially like treatment courts. We can handle them better. If they had stayed felonies, that low level, I think it was a level one and level two felonies on the SRA, Sentencing Reform Act, they were closing these cases immediately upon resolution. In municipal and district courts, you can suspend jail time on and have probation. And so that ability to get people in, get the behavior addressed and stopped, and suspend jail time on the condition of no criminal law violations, drug and alcohol treatment, et cetera, that gets people back on track.
So what has been the posture of the Federal Way Police Department and of the city when they encounter officers encounter someone using drugs out on the streets?
We arrest them. I
No
mean,
questions, no warnings, no.
no, I mean, but with the what was happening was this crazy thing where, and it's really tragic. Sometimes I would be driving on down Pacific Highway, and people who use fentanyl, we've all seen it. They're literally like bent over,
Yep, Fetty
standing
Lane.
up. Yeah, and it's tragic and it's sickening and we were seeing people using open air use. And we couldn't do anything about it, really. And so now we can. And if we see it, we interrupt it. And we make an arrest.
Yep, so you're making an arrest, and because it's sort of in this jurisdiction of a gross misdemeanor, you guys are what? Offering, trying to go toward treatment, but if they don't accept it, then it's jail time?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine
So
that. Imagine
yeah.
this sane world we're living in. And you see it. You see it
Yeah.
borne out in the numbers. And I would even argue the homicide figure. I would even argue that between the motor vehicle or between the police being able to pursue again, and you guys doing that, and the substance abuse, I think that's why you're seeing half the number of homicides. Because we
Yeah.
know also, drive-by shootings or whatever it is, a lot of those are committed in stolen vehicles. And the people who are out there abusing substances and homeless or whatever, they're way more likely to be the victim of a homicide if
That's
they're out
right.
there on the streets and vulnerable. So, Nicole, yes, good stuff down there in Federal Way. We love it. Let's duplicate this across the state. Love to see these numbers, and we'll see where the trend goes from here. Mayor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, Brandy.
It's just amazing how that happens. Enforce the law, crime goes down. Oh my gosh, mind-boggling. If only we had more elected leaders who we send to Olympia who understood that simple equation. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletters so you can be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, so there is, of course, a lot of hand-wringing and scrambling in Washington State and other blue states over the incoming Trump administration's specifically what they might do on the issue of immigration. Donald Trump has made pretty clear what he's going to do. I have no reason to believe that he won't carry out some form of mass deportations. He's even talked about ending birthright citizenship. So there's a lot that is in conflict with states like ours that are sanctuary states and cities within our state and counties within our state that are sanctuary jurisdictions. And so we anticipate a lot of conflict. What I didn't anticipate is the actual Mexican consulate here in our area trying to do what it can to thwart its host country's lawful efforts to remove people who came here illegally? Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, this is nutso stuff. So the Meadowdale High School, which is part of the Linwood or the Edmonds School District, rather, I think, they put out this flyer for an event. It's in Spanish and in English, but it says, "Know your rights. The Mexican consulate will present information about immigration to families and allies in the Edmonds School District and neighboring communities. Learn how to prepare for immigration raids and your individual rights when approached, detained, or incarcerated by police or immigration agents." And they plan to have it December 17th at Meadowdale High School in the library there. So again, public high school hosting an event that the Mexican consulate will be at, to describe to families, allies, and immigrants what to do if they get caught up essentially in one of these Trump administration immigration raids. So there's a couple very clearly glaring issues here. What the Trump administration is proposing to do is lawful. Whether they take it to one extreme and say, we're going to raid homes where people, yeah, been here legally or illegally for 20 years, but committed no other crimes. If they want to do that lawfully, they can do that. Now, I think time is better spent and resources are better spent going after people who have committed serious law violations since they entered the country. But Donald Trump could do all of the above. And guess what? As president of the United States, who's directing the federal agencies, he would be within his rights to do that. The federal government does not have to abide by Washington State's sanctuary status. So what Trump is proposing doing is lawful. Yet you have a public school district in Washington State that is hosting an event essentially to direct families on how to avoid deportation. And not just that, so that's bad enough. You have the Mexican consulate doing that. Think about that. You have a consulate that is here in its host country in the United States, and they are plotting and helping people here who are Mexican nationals who are here illegally on how to thwart the efforts of the United States government to remove them. That to me is enough to close down the Mexican consulate in Seattle. That to me is enough to have the federal government do that. They did it at the Russian consulate in Seattle, and I'm not trying to compare Mexico and Russia. But you have a consulate that's actively encouraging people to violate federal law and to impede federal authorities? Why should we let you operate here? Why shouldn't we close the consulate here? That's insane stuff. On our soil, technically, I don't know if the consulate constitutes Mexican soil or if that's just an embassy, but on our soil, helping and trying to encourage ways to thwart federal authorities for our country. That's wild. So this came out, I think our friend Ari Hoffman had shared it, that this event is going on. Nicole reached out this morning to not only the Mexican consulate, but also to Meadowdale, Meadowdale High School. And we did get a response. Nicole, was this from... This is from Curtis, pronouns he, him, director of communications for the Edmonds School District. Okay. So got back to us just a few minutes ago. Thank you for reaching out. We've decided to cancel the event in question. So some breaking news there. They are going to be canceling the event. Well, they're going to cancel it because it's totally inappropriate for them to encourage illegal behavior and for the Mexican consulate to be encouraging illegal behavior, right? No, they're canceling it because, quote, the online attention it garnered has led to some online comments of harassing and threatening nature. Due to this, we believe it's in the best interest of families and staff to not hold the event at this time. Yeah, no, we were exposed for doing this really ridiculous thing and people got mad at us online, and that's why we're canceling it. Not because we're a public school and we shouldn't be holding an event like this. He says the intent of the event was similar to one recently hosted by the Shoreline Police Department and was to be focused on the possibility of the impact such immigration actions would have on some of the families we serve. We want to assure our families that the district remains committed to supporting all students, regardless of immigration status. This event was intended to be one way to provide resources and information on this topic of concern. Please reach out if you have any additional questions. I appreciate them responding, but it seems like they don't really have an issue with the event, or they don't see the problem with the event that they were going to host. They just see a problem with people's reaction to the event that we're going to host, which means they haven't really learned anything from it. And again, I have said, I'm really not in support of... If the Trump administration wants to go door to door, like ripping parents away from their kids who've lived here for 20 years, I don't really see a whole lot of benefit in that. Look, I agree that people need to come here legally, that we should get as many illegal residents out of the country as possible. I think there's a limit to what we're going to be able to achieve. And there's also got to be some sort of hierarchy for who you're pursuing, right? People who have been here, committed violent crimes, been convicted of crimes, and then were shielded by sanctuary policies, like, they have got to go. And I understand, I mean, even Hillary Clinton said, if you came here illegally, deport them. I get it. There's a lot of nuance here, though, right? There's a lot of nuance in what it does to a student who's in a school district who might have been born here, but their parents came here illegally 25 years ago or something. Is that really who the Trump administration is going to know about or focus on? I'm not sure. But it is completely inappropriate for a public school district to be hosting an event like this that the idea obviously is to try to give people ways to avoid immigration officials. And for the Mexican consulate to do that, to me, I don't want to see the Mexican consulate close. I think that it serves a purpose, right? But if you are, I mean, one of the reasons the Russian consulate closed is they were using it essentially as a base to spy on Americans. I don't think that the Mexican consulate is doing that. But if you're actively supporting people and helping people break federal law in the country you're housed in, that's very, very problematic. Absolutely unbelievable. But the event is canceled, so maybe the attention achieved its end goal anyway. All right, I keep encouraging you guys, take the First Mark Challenge, and I feel like a ton of you are, because we get emails, it seems like every day now, from people who took the First Mark Challenge and have had fantastic results. This is a first for us, though. So we got an email from Chad, who took the First Mark Challenge. He says, I went to First Mark for my car, house, and pet insurance. Levi at First Mark was unable to help with my car or house, but he did give me insurance for my service dog, Sergeant. It saved me over $100 a month. Levi said I was his first ever pet insurance policy. I truly loved the customer service Levi gave me. I love that. I mean, First Mark can help you with so many off the wall. And pet insurance really isn't that off the wall, but I imagine that you need more insurance on a service animal because service animals are stupid expensive. And sometimes they're covered by nonprofits, but if you, you know, well, God forbid a service animal dies, it's much harder to replace and much more costly to replace a service animal.
Well, that, and if he gets sick or something and he needs to get the medicine he needs.
Yeah, exactly. So this is another example where Levi at First Mark said, hey, actually, you know, we can't beat the rate that you're getting right now for your car or your house. However, we can get you some pet insurance. And it's going to save you $100 a month. $100 a month is $1,200 a year, people. And it's all because he scheduled time to take the First Mark Challenge completely for free. You never pay First Mark anything for their services. It really is a no-brainer. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. I don't have pet insurance. I know that's been a popular thing to help cover. You do. And you've liked it, right?
I used it because my cats got kitty COVID. I mean, I don't know if that's the technical term.
Should have been wearing a kitty mask. Did you not mask your cats?
I did not. No.
Shame
on you. They did get respiratory illnesses, and so I did use it for that. But yeah, I just never wanted to be put in the position where I had to choose, you know, money over
100%
over what to do with them. So yeah, that's just this extra sense of security. Yeah. It's worth it to me just to not worry about it.
Mackenzie has definitely been an expensive dog this last year. Yeah. So if I could go back in time, we would have got insurance for her because she's, you know,
you have to get it when they're
prone.
Kittens or puppies, because then it's cheaper and you're paying it over a lifetime. If you got it for Mackenzie, you know, a couple years ago, it would have been ridiculously expensive as well.
Probably not more than like the insane bills we've had for her this year.
I know.
It's not like she's getting old. Our black lab is getting old. And it's not as I'll get back to the news in a second. She's very old. She's 14. It is not as if like she's just getting old and we're trying to keep her alive with expensive surgeries. No, she had these one-off things. Like she got this infection in her face from eating something that jammed into her. Mm-hmm. And her face ballooned up like this. So what is our option? Like, nah, I don't do anything about that.
Her down.
It's like, okay, that's not an option. So anyway.
Poor Mackenzie.
I digress. Where was I at? I have an apology to give.
Oh.
Yeah. We try to make sure that on this show, you know, we are honoring and observing some of our really important, more meaningful holidays in a way that does them justice. And so I should have had a special show over the weekend to recognize one of this nation's most important holidays, and that is Pansexual and Panromantic Pride Day. Sorry, I tried to get through that, but laughing. Yeah, we missed Pansexual and Panromantic Pride Day. I do apologize for that. The good news is HHS didn't, and they used their government social media account to make sure that all of us knew about Pansexual and Panromantic Pride Day, which I do appreciate HHS's attention to this important matter. They said, today on Pansexual and Panromantic Pride Day, everyone deserves to feel seen, respected, and supported, no matter who they love. Create a world where everyone feels proud to be themselves. Rainbow, hashtag Pansexual Pride Day. So despite this being, I know, really a critical holiday, I need to Google really quickly what both of those things mean. pansexuality refers to a sexual, romantic, or emotional attraction. It's important that we understand, really, we grasp the meaning of the holiday. So just, you know, give me this opportunity to inform you. Pansexuality refers to sexual, romantic, or emotional attraction toward people of all genders, regardless of their sex or gender identity. That's really inclusive. That's very inclusive. Like, hey, I can be attracted to anyone at any given time. All right, panromantic. Let me just make sure. Panromantic. I want to make sure I get panromantic is a, often shortened to panro. Thank you. Is a romantic orientation describing an individual who experiences romantic attraction to individuals where gender identity is not a factor. Okay, it sounds like the same thing as what I just... Panromantic individuals may instead feel that their romantic attraction is influenced by other factors, such as presentation or personality. Okay, so, oh, panromantic individuals may be described as being gender blind. Oh, color blind, gender blind. I do not see a woman. I just see a human being a when I look at you, Nicole.
Eyes and a nose.
So anyway, happy pansexual and panromantic Pride Day. Again, I really appreciate the fine folks at Health and Human Services taking time out of their very busy days, obviously, to inform us of this important holiday. And I will not make the same mistake next year. Speaking of insane made-up words, the Oregon Public Schools are sending out some interesting health surveys to 11th graders. And I included this on the show today because I think it's important to know that, like, Washington State is not alone in this insanity. Some of the things we're seeing happen here in schools are absolutely happening in places like Oregon and places like California. And that's why the West Coast is just falling into an ocean of despair. So I saw this put out by lawmakers, some Republican lawmakers in Oregon. So 11th grade health survey. What do you think should be an 11th grade health survey? I would say, like, and this is a voluntary health survey, so if you don't fill it out, you're not going to be penalized. I would say, like, you know, like talking about, you know, suicide would be probably okay for 11th graders, like their mental well-being, their emotional well-being, you know, like maybe depression. I think that's probably pretty fine, especially given this epidemic of depression that we have. Let's see, like, you know, informing them about maybe romance, sexual partners, healthy relationships, you know, STDs, those things, like for a health survey, I think that's fine. Let's check out the health survey that Oregon Public Schools is handing out to students. Let's see. What is your sexual orientation? You can choose more than one. Straight, lesbian, gay, bisexual, pansexual, asexual, or aromantic, queer, questioning, something else, or I'm not sure. Okay, well, that doesn't seem to really have anything to do with someone's health. Let's just keep going here. What is your gender identity? You can choose more than one. Okay. Two-spirit. Girl or woman, boy or man, demigirl or demiboy, non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer, questioning, or agender slash no gender. What is demigirl? All right, hold on. Get my Google. Demigirl. What is a demigirl? Demigirl, also known as demi-woman, demi-female, or demi-lady, is a demi-gender identity describing someone who partially identifies as a woman or a girl. Got it. Okay. Let's see here. And then there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 options to choose from if you're Native Hawaiian, different genders. And then it says, are you transgender? Yes, no, I'm not sure. I prefer not to answer. Okay, really getting in some good stuff in this health survey. Here's my favorite part of the health survey, because that other stuff, you know, that just happens, I think, these days. There's a whole page about climate change in the health survey. How confident are you that climate change is or is not happening? That's a question on a health survey. Oh, here's one. How often do you feel emotionally stressed, for example, helpless, frustrated, or sad about the future because of climate change? In the past 12 months, have your feelings about climate change negatively affected your daily life? For example, ability to focus or concentrate, sleep, eat, have fun, enjoy relationships? Is that where 11th graders are at? That their feelings about climate change are so depressing that they can't eat, sleep, have fun, or enjoy relationships. Here's the thing about questions like this. You are signaling to these kids that they should be in a state of despair over climate change. That's what they're doing. You are signaling to these 11th graders that climate change is so serious that they should be feeling helpless, frustrated, sad, and have an inability to focus or concentrate, sleep, eat, have fun, or enjoy relationships. I just believe more than ever that we have to either fix public schools in a hurry or take our kids out of public schools. Because that is insane. Can you imagine your kid coming home with this stupid health survey? A health survey. I would like to see an example of what a health survey looked like 20 years ago in Washington State. What kind of health surveys were kids being given at school 20 years ago in Washington State? I'm sure it was like sex stuff and whatever it is. Like, do you feel safe at home? You know, that question about, do you feel safe at home? Making sure there's pressure. No abuse, peer pressure, drugs.
And it was drugs, yeah.
Drugs and alcohol and drinking.
Yep.
No, now you have to tell them whether you're a girl, a boy, a demigirl, non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer, questioning, straight, lesbian, gay, bisexual, pansexual, asexual, aromatic, queer, questioning, or if you feel so depressed about climate change that you can't eat and sleep. We are raising a very troubled generation of kids, and we have no one to blame but ourselves. All right, really quickly down, we went to Oregon. Let's go to California quick and national. So we talked on the show last week about how Gavin Newsom, he's going to be, I think, in the running, him and Bob Ferguson. I don't know who's going to come in first for most STDS governor, severe Trump derangement syndrome, Matt Gilbert. Coined that. But Newsom's trying really hard. He, despite, you know, budget issues there, he's asked the state legislature for $25 million for a legal defense fund before Trump takes office. So yeah, deficit, no big deal. Let's get $25 million set aside so we can go straight up STDS once Trump takes office. So on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we had on, he's one of really my favorite political commentators out of California, Dr. Houman Hammadi. He's been on our show before. We had him on for a series we did last year called Truth Tellers, which we're going to be doing again this year, so stay tuned for that. But he's been covering, you know, the political shift in California and everything going on. I mean, California saw a big shift toward Donald Trump from 2020 to 2024, which begs the question, do voters in California really want Gavin Newsom to be setting aside $25 million to go after the Trump administration? Here's part of my conversation with Dr. Hammadi on Sunday's show. You know, California shifted double digits toward Donald Trump. It's still not a red state by any stretch. You know, Donald Trump didn't win it. But I mean, you know, when it comes to California voters trying to, you know, like wake up politicians and say, hey, you're not focusing on what we care about. Is it a popular concept to put aside $25 million or so to fight Donald Trump?
No, I don't know of one single person outside of Sacramento politicians who supports putting 1 cent aside to fight an incoming administration before they've even been inaugurated and taken power. It is absolutely ridiculous. And what is that? This is a state that's until recently had a $76 or $78 billion deficit. This is a state that is hemorrhaging cash by giving entitlements to everyone under the sun, pumping $24 billion into homelessness that disappeared. It vaporized. No one knows where that money vanished to, right? In the last handful of years under Newsom. This is a state that had $30 billion or more in unemployment theft. Again, money that has disappeared and they don't know where it went, that now small business owners have to pay back to the federal government. It turned out it was a loan, not state taxpayer money. When that's happening, do you think there's one person alive who wants a dime spent on such a concept? And when, you know, I tweeted about this, Brandon Richards, who's one of the communications directors for Gavin Newsom, immediately late at night, he's a rapid response director, as they're called, came in and starts posting all these things justifying that spending, saying, well, last time Trump was in office, we made so much money by suing him that it paid for the litigation. You know what? That is absolute nonsense. The people know that we are broke and the people have their priorities. The only reason Newsom is spending this money is in order to bolster his national credentials as the anti-Trump governor. He knows that Shapiro isn't doing that. He knows that Wes Moore in Maryland isn't doing that, right? He wants to be known for that, as much as I think it's going to backfire on him. And he's using taxpayer money to basically fund his political campaign for the future, claiming it's all done to help the people. absolute nonsense, and I don't think anyone is buying it. This is going to backfire on him badly.
Yeah, and I hope it does. You can watch my whole conversation with Dr. Houman Hammadi, an author, Fox News commentator, on Sundays with subscribers, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, to sign up for that and all of our Sunday episodes. And I'll tell you, it was such a fascinating conversation because we talked a lot about that shift that happened, right, in California, and they rejected all these soft-on-crime candidates in areas that have been destroyed by progressive policies like San Francisco and L.A., and we talk about, like, what happened there to lead to that? And how can we get it to happen here? And so it's just fascinating to hear the level of parity between what happened in California and some of the things going on here. So I think there's still hope here. And that was sort of the point of that conversation is if there's hope for California, there's absolutely hope for Washington State. All right, we'll get to our daily subscribe. In case you're ever curious if this show is really live. It is. We'll get to our daily subscriber show poll coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, it's kind of been this weird stagnant period in the real estate market, but there's also, you know, this clamoring, like, pent-up demand. And so if you are thinking about selling your home, I recommend first reaching out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com and ask him for a free market analysis. So we'll kind of talk about how well your home is positioned, you know, depending on the neighborhood it's at, and when you reach out to him, so you can kind of get an idea of how much you can expect to get for your home. You can also use their free home value calculator right there on the website to find out how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then Wes and his team have a lot of, because one of the key things right now for your selling your home is you need to make sure that your listing stands out. And yeah, if you've got some cosmetic upgrades to make, that isn't going to hurt. One of the nice things Wes Jones and his team do is they have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. So they can actually come in, they can fix any, you know, make any cosmetic updates that you need to make, manage those projects. They can even help you pay for it up front, which is really cool. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. So let me give you a little context for why I asked this. There was a video put out on social media over the weekend that I had watched, and it has to do with this leading gender care doctor who is perfectly fine, thinks it's perfectly normal to, like, you know, cut off young girls' breasts or whatever it is, or other appendages, and do gender reassignment surgeries on kids. Like, she thinks that's perfectly natural and normal. Now, I have tried, I think, and had a pretty nuanced opinion on the transgender issue. And it's one that has really evolved, like many things for me, over the last 3 years. I would say up to about a year ago, like, if you're an adult, everything's on the table for me. I don't care what you do as long as it doesn't impact my life. I've always been consistent on that. With kids, you know, the position I took probably a year, year and a half ago was like, would I do it for my child? No. Would I, you know, let my kid get gender hormone therapy or gender reassignment surgery? No. But because I believe so much in parental rights, I defended parents who wanted to do it, you know, with consultation with a doctor, their kid, and their parent. I thought, well, if a parent wants to consent, then that is that parent's business. I'm ashamed of that position now, I would say. I think as we've heard over the years from people like the MultiCare whistleblower, Tamara Pitsky, as we've heard from a detransitioner, a young man on this show, and as I've kind of opened my ears to some of these stories, I think that was a shameful position for me to have taken, because I do believe that it amounts to child abuse to do that to a kid when they're young. And there are a lot of laws that protect kids from things that their parents might do to them, abusive or whatever it is. You know, trying to change your child's gender or saying, you know, telling a doctor, consenting to it when they're 10, 11, 12 years old, when we know that it could have disastrous implications for them later in life, I don't agree with it anymore. And I just want to acknowledge that that's, I think, for me, a position I took that I really, really regret taking, but I've learned and I've grown, and what else are you going to do? So I put that out on social media over the weekend, but I asked you guys, and I'm, you know, I'm open to hearing your opinions on this. I said, do you believe minors should be able to receive gender care as long as they have the consent of their parents? Because I do think there's some inherent sort of push and pull there for conservatives in particular, who fight for, who believe in parental rights, who don't want sort of a situation where parents are cut out of things. So, you know, in this case, do you agree with it? So right now, 88% say no. They do not believe that kids should be able to get any sort of gender care, even with parental consent. 8% say yes, everything except surgery. So you'd be okay with gender hormone therapy, for instance, as long as parents consent, but surgery goes too far. And then 4% said you're fine with whatever it is, as long as there's parental consent. Brandon Ferris says not just no, but F no. Sorry to swear, Brandy, but this shouldn't even be a conversation. You can't even smoke till you're 21 anymore. And that is something. You know, you could say, some people compare it to, you can't even get an ear piercing until you're 18. Well, you can, as long as you have parental consent. You can get an ear piercing earlier, but an ear piercing is not the same as like gender reassignment. But there are things like smoking that the government says, you know, your parent can't consent to you smoking a cigarette. You cannot give your child a cigarette at the age of 12 and consent to them smoking. Technically, I mean, I'm sure there are parents who let their kids smoke before the age of 21, but you can't actually do that. So there are things that we prohibit that are still unlawful, even if a parent consents to it. Christine Dana says, if they want to transition, they should be made to wait until 25 when their brains are fully matured. I don't know about that, only because there's so many other things. Like, again, you use the war fighting analogy. If they can fight a war, they can't decide whether they can do a transition. Steve says the medical community is willfully blind to the potential long-term effects of the drugs being prescribed, and in most cases are prescribing outside of prescribed use. We will look back on this era someday as the lobotomy equivalent era of childhood experimentation. Awful stuff. Yeah, and I certainly for me, I've come a long way, and it took hearing the stories. It took hearing the stories about what was happening in some of these gender clinics, how they'd ignore all these other means of making a dealing with gender dysphoria and jump to medical intervention. It took me hearing from a detransitioner on this show who described the horror and the mental suffering that he endured during that period of time in his life. Brenda says, a hard no. Even hormonal treatments have negative consequences that last a lifetime. Let me see. Chris, I cannot permit the point we just made. I can't permit my children to smoke, drink, or get a tattoo. But in the words of Bill Maher, the dick saw is okay. Of course not. I think you can permit your child to get a tattoo. Can you not?
I thought you could. Yeah.
I think you can. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think you can permit your child to get a tattoo. All right, I'll read one or two more. What?
Yeah, because I know young people that have gotten them because they had parents with them.
Yeah, so, I'm pretty sure you can. That's one thing. Michelle says, those therapies are not reversible. It is abuse to allow children with no knowledge of the world or relationships to make lifelong decisions about subjects they know nothing about. A 12-year-old girl doesn't know if she'll want children one day or not. Boys and girls know nothing of sex or the intimacy of sex within a mature relationship, and taking hormones or having these surgeries will never allow them to experience it when they're older. Just plain abuse. And I'm leading more and more toward that. Matthew Cook says, gender affirming care is akin to child abuse. So just an interesting thing. And I, you know, again, I think you guys give me a lot of grace for, it's my job to have opinions. But I also want to make sure that my opinions are based in good, solid reality and facts and are morally consistent. And so I think that's the trouble I had with the parental rights aspect of it, and feeling like opposing the ability of parents to consent to these things wasn't a morally consistent position, but I've come to believe otherwise. All right, we'll get to our comments and our closing sanity check first. You saw how the market responded right after the election. Whenever we have a major world event, the market is always responding to it in some way. So the question is, are you happy with how your retirement portfolio is positioned after the election and how your money manager is responding to significant events like changes in world leaders or major changes in policy? Or is it time to get another perspective? It's always smart to get a second opinion when it comes to critical healthcare decisions. Well, Zach Abraham, who's the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital, thinks it's no different when it comes to the health of your retirement portfolio. So you can get that second opinion with Bulwark's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. During that, they'll cover the impacts of the election. They'll give you an outlook for 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Don't put it off. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. All right, questions and comments. On the CEO murder, ZDS says, I think the term mentally ill is used way too often. I think most of the time bad people just decide to do bad things to others. But I just really believe that, like, there has to be some level of mental illness, right? For you to go to the extent of murdering another person, like whether it's a baked in, like you're a sociopath or something like that. I don't think every murderer has to be a sociopath, but I definitely think there's some level of mental illness that's involved whenever anyone makes a decision to take another human life or to do something violent like that. Penny, on Daniel Penny's case and his acquittal, like, amen. Matt Gilbert, don't worry, I'm not getting religious. You're probably not worried about that. That's the one thing I haven't. I joked, though. I said, I saw this video online. What was the video? It was like some sort of song or prayer or something that was just real, real, like, cool.
Oh, the singing lady that you,
and maybe, no, this was church, before that, thought. this was before that, and I was like, man, you better be careful or I'll find Trump and Jesus all in the same year. And all the Christians were like, yes, please, come to church with me. I was like, oh God, that's the one thing I haven't come around on yet. Matt Gilbert, equality is leaving women to fend for themselves. Yeah, also Mike is hunting this, the swear jar is not in effect, apparently.
I thought you might take that as an opportunity to say happy birthday to your husband.
Yes, oh, my sweet husband, and he's enjoying hunting, so I just hope he's having a fantastic day. Equality is leaving women to fend for themselves. Yeah, like, okay, if we really want equality, then Daniel Penny can just have said to the women on the subway, like, you do you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, like, I'm a strong woman, but if I'm being threatened or intimidated or something in public and there's a man present, I should not have to defend myself. That man should be right? I shouldn't have to defend myself.
Because of the same reason we don't think that men should participate in female sports, because there is a biological difference that makes them a little bit stronger sometimes.
Yeah, the man should fight the man.
I mean, I don't want one smaller than me coming to my defense. I hope it's one bigger than me, right?
Yeah.
Coming to my defense.
Right, but I take the small one.
Yes, but I mean, there's a physical difference.
First of all, short kings, you're welcome to come to my defense too. If it comes to fighting off a killer, you want to step
Please
in
do.
By all means.
Please
Nicole
do.
Might judge your height. Yes. I will not. But yeah, I mean, I'll try to defend myself to the best of my ability, but if there's a man present, I want that man to come defend me.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm going to help out, you know, I'll hold a leg or something.
There are biological differences. Come in handy.
On Governor Inslee putting a hiring freeze and then sending out a sweeping memorandum on how we need to improve DEI hiring, Krista says, participation trophies flying off shelves in the form of jobs people aren't qualified for. Brilliant idea. Yeah, the comments were much less open to the idea of reducing qualifications for jobs than I was. Janine says, seems more like they're loosening the application process for illegals. Driver's licenses, you don't have to speak English. I think both those are easily accessible and needed in the U.S. On our Sundays with Subscribers episode, Baron of Gray Matter says, want to be like San Francisco? 70% of businesses leave and you get a world famous poop app. Then things will change. Maybe. We talked about the poop app on Sunday's show when Ron DeSantis brought up like all the places that like people had defecated in San Francisco or something when he was debating Gavin Newsom. Good stuff. All right. On the pro illegal immigration thing that was going to be held at Meadowdale High School, Todd Welch said, how would Bob Ferguson behave if a county decided to enforce a state law? If a county said we will not ignore state laws, if a county said we will ignore state laws they don't like, the same behavior is what a sanctuary state is. Yeah, it's basically telling the federal government, like, screw you. Erica, there's nothing wrong with them teaching the families their rights here, whether legal or not. Believe it. There's nothing wrong with them teaching the families their rights, whether legal or not.
She's defending the class.
I'm
she's
so confused by this. It's just hard to read.
Believe it or not, they
still have rights. Yes. Okay, I see what you mean. We just need some commas in there and stuff. The not you. Yes, they still have rights. I understand that they still have rights. But when you have the Mexican consulate who's essentially going to give people ways that they can avoid being deported for doing something illegal, that is beyond like the rights that you, like, they have rights as citizens, but they don't have a right to break the law. And they don't have the right to, like, unduly, how do I, like, to, they don't have a right to stop the federal government from enforcing the law. Like, that's not, you're kind of confusing things. But I'm saying that they, of course they have rights. Of course they have rights. But if they broke the law, there's nothing that stops them. There's no right that protects them from being arrested and deported. And that's not the role of a public school district. Matt Gilbert, $5 super chat. With the end of the year coming up, I just want to say, give Nicole New Year's Day off. Why are you putting that in there? You'll have New Year's Day off. He I'm giving you 2 weeks off. Jesus.
So I felt like Megan
White, tattoos on minors, even with parental consent, are illegal. We own a tattoo business. Shout out to Action Tattoo in Auburn. Okay, so it is.
And a few people have said that, I guess. So different states have different things, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a parent should be able to consent to a tattoo.
Yeah. I mean, but maybe along the same, I mean, if you're comparing it with this. Because I guess
it's permanent.
It's permanent. And yeah, I mean,
ear piercing is not permanent. So in theory, that's the difference between the state law. When you can consent as a parent to this, to the ear pierce, but you can't consent to a tattoo. One is permanent, the other's not. But you can consent to lifetime sex changes. There's no moral consistency there. It's just absolutely insane. But thank you, Megan. And yes, shout out to Action Tattoo in Auburn. Mm. Megan, you should hit me up because I'm curious. I have this like scar on my leg that I hate. And I've seen people get these like scar tattoos where they just cover it up with like your skin tone. Oh. You know what I mean? So Megan, hit me up if that's something you might be willing to do. Is it a
color?
It's like...
Is it like red?
Yeah, it's this one.
Huh.
See it?
Well, little, not from... It's okay. Shadowed, but
yeah, it's like a little red thing. Kinda. Okay, it's a little scar.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm curious. Okay.
All right, you can at least lighten it. I'm sure they can lighten it.
I realize it's not the coolest tattoo, but I don't like the thing and I want to cover it up. Anyway, good... whatever. Good comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Finally, a protest we can get behind. All right, this from Fox News. High school students facing uprising. High school facing student uprising over ban of shirts protesting trans athletes after girls beg for safety. Students at this school have gone viral on social media in recent weeks amid an ongoing lawsuit over two girls cross-country runners allegedly being told they can't wear T-shirts that read Save Girls Sports. The two teenage girls heading the lawsuit allege their shirts were compared to swastikas by school administrators, while a trans athlete competes on their team and took a varsity spot from a female player. So at this school in California, of all places, love it, these girls are like, no, we're not tolerating this. And they're protesting by wearing shirts that say Save Girls Sports. Like, men are taking our positions. We don't think that's fair. And one of these girls, a 16-year-old named Riley Morrow, gave an impassioned speech at a recent school board meeting.
The whole LGBTQ is shoved down our throats. It is put in our face. And we live in a society where it is almost impossible to speak out on it without facing the repercussions of it. I try my best not to put personal beliefs into it, but seeing this firsthandedly, seeing my teammates getting their spots taken for one person that's choosing to be a girl, it's not okay. To see the athletic director turn around and tell my teammates that their shirts that say Save Girl Sports be compared to a swastika, that is not okay. These girls feel silenced, they felt silenced, and when they finally spoke out and did something to go against it and speak out, not directed towards a single person at all, they were completely stabbed in the back by the person that was that we were told would support us and be able to help us through this. They were said that it was a hate crime, that they were targeting that one person, and that is not the case at all. Taylor and Caitlin are two of the most nice people I've ever met in my life, and to see them having to be told that they're being hateful people is not okay. And it is not okay that I have to be in a position where I'm going to practice and having to see a male in booty shorts and having to see that around me. As a 16-year-old girl, I don't find that as a safe environment. I don't at all. And going into a locker room and seeing males in there, I don't find that safe. I don't find going to the bathroom safe when there's guys in there. It's not okay. I'm a 16-year-old girl. There's girls around me where we do not feel safe having boys in our environment. And it isn't okay. It isn't okay to have them on our team. It isn't okay when it's going. It's the genetics. It is not okay.
16-year-old Riley Morrow down in California saying what needs to be said where it needs to be said. And it's sad that we're leaving it up to teenagers and not doing what's right for them when it comes to having to fight for their rights. Just ridiculous. All right, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Remember, you can gift, you can't gift common sense, but you can gift them a window into what common sense looks like and encourage them to adopt their own common sense and sane positions. Give the gift of Undivided, patreon.com/undivided/gift. Probably the best gift you can give this holiday season. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thanks for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you're not a subscriber already, please do so. Help support our mission and our movement and the work that we do here on Undivided for just $5 a month. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We'll see you guys back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Boop, boop, boop. Boop, 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 boop.